Welcome to Business Growth on Purpose, the show for B2B owners who are hungry for new growth and want to learn ways to drive better revenue. This is our 2022 recap, where we revisit a few of our favorite guests and episodes from the show so far. Today's guest in our 2022 recap is none other than Marcus Sheridan. He's the author of They Ask You Answer, and he joined us back in episode 59 for his episode Transformative Conversations. His approach to transformative sales conversations positions you as the expert and attaches your prospect's trust to you. And the best part is that you can do this repeatedly by keeping in mind a few simple principles that he shared with us in his episode. Marcus is a highly sought-after international keynote speaker, known for his ability to excite and engage and motivate audiences with a simple yet powerful transformation business approach. He's inspired thousands of audiences and helped millions of people from all over the world to achieve their own success with his book and his philosophy, They Ask, You Answer. This is one of our older episodes, but no surprise, Marcus continues to be a fan favorite. We hope you guys enjoy.
Well, welcome, Marcus, to the Revenue Throughput Podcast.
Jose, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so Marcus, it's always good for our listeners to hear it directly from our guest. Who do you serve and what do you do for them?
Well, I serve anyone that's in the generally in the sales or marketing front, and my specialty is simplifying what so many others make complicated so that ultimately businesses can generate more trust, more traffic, more leads, more sales. And I have a special passion for transformative communication, specifically for leaders and sales teams. And so most of my time is digital sales and marketing, but a little bit of my time is on transformative communication. But there's a big overlap between the two, frankly.
I'm sure. Well, why don't we expand on that just a little bit? Because that does sound interesting. It has me leaning in. Transformative communication. That's what I want at home with my kids. That's what I want with my wife. Transformative communication. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, let's just start with one of the core philosophies I teach, which is called question first, right? Question first. So let's say you're a leader or a manager. Somebody comes up to you on your team and asks you a question. Question you've probably heard about 1,000 times. Question that if you wanted to, you could answer it immediately. Just give it to them because you already know. That's your option. Option one, just give them the immediate answer. Option two is instead of giving them the answer, you could walk through the process of them figuring out the answer for themselves. Because here's what's so interesting. The majority of our time when our employees, our teammates, our children even come to us with a question, usually the answer can already be found therein. We just have to help that particular answer come out. But most parents, certainly most leaders, they don't do this. Instead, again, they give the answers. So the question is why? Why do we just give the answer? The reason why we just give the answer, as you know, Jose, is because we want to generally feel smart. We want people to see us as the leader that we are, as the expert that we are, and we kind of like it. But then what does that develop? It develops a pattern where they keep coming back to us again and again and again. And therefore, we have a leadership development problem within the organization, because they haven't learned how to solve their own problems. And then instead of owning the business owns us. And that's not a fun place to be.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting about that, right? So one, as you said, why do people do that? The other reason is just everybody's so pressured with so much going on in their lives.
We think it's time efficient, whereas it's the exact opposite.
Exactly. Right. So we just think, hey, I'll just tell them it's the red box. The red box or whatever the answer is, right?
Sorry.
And it just seems easier for, isn't everybody happier that way? But to your point, it still puts me at the hub of the hub and spoke. Now I'm always, and eventually I would imagine the rest of the team learns to not even try, because what goes with giving the answer is also that I really want to be the one giving the answer.
That's correct.
I don't want you moving forward.
There's no empowerment there, right? And there's incredible confidence when somebody comes to you and you empower them to come up with a solution and you give them the green light for said solution and they walk out with a pep in their step thinking, yeah, I am capable of this thing. To your point, Jose, it does take a little bit longer of a, more of a time investment at first when you shift over to this mindset as a leader or even as a parent, because of the fact that you're now working through the thing with them. But once you start to do it consistently, you actually get so fast at it, so quick with it. And to your point, now, instead of them necessarily coming to you, eventually they'll say, okay, let me think about this. Because I know if I met with Marcus right now, he'd ask me a couple questions and I'd figure this out on my own. So how can I figure this out on my own right now? That's powerful. You know, let me give you another just quick example, because you mentioned the parental side, and it's all the same thing. It's all principles, right? It's all principles. So I was, you know, I fly a ton, right? And I was once sitting in front of this mom and a daughter that was probably like 4 years old, right? You could tell the mom was a great mom and the daughter was, she was probably borderline genius. And over the course of 45 minutes, I heard this little girl ask question after question after question after question after question. She probably asked at least 50 questions to her mom in 45 minutes. Maybe it was 100. I don't know. I mean, it didn't count. It just kept coming and coming and coming. It's a faucet, right? And each time, what do you think the mom did, Jose?
Did she try to answer the question each time?
She just answered it.
She just answered each time. So of course, that invited more questions.
That invited more questions. Now, not inferring at all that she wasn't a great mom. She was a great mom, I could tell. But if she had just for a second said, let's figure this out together, one time. Now all of a sudden it's a different conversation. So this is for any parent, right? This is for any parent. This is for any friend. This is for any uncle, niece, nephew. It does, it's all the same thing. It's all the same thing, right? But this is what we tend to do. There's an appeal of being viewed as Google in our organization, where someone can go and get all the answers, but that's not the end game. It's not the end game.
Well, it's also the what's interesting about that too, is like in Six Sigma and quality, right? It's the five whys. They say, always figure out what the root cause is. Why is that that way? Why is that that way? And you keep going for at least five whys deep to try to figure out what the thing is. So that becomes
that's the great lost art, right? Right. It's the ability, if you think about most conversations that happen within organizations, very, very surface level. Like, what's the most surface level question in the world that we ask? How's it going? Person says, fine. And that's where it stops. And that's not even surface level. That's just, we checked a box right there of engagement, but we didn't actually achieve anything. And we're certainly not better for it, right? So leader shifts their mindset. And instead of saying, how's it going? They say something like, Jose, real quick, tell me, what's the best thing that's happening in your life right now? To one of their teammates, mm-hmm. to one of their employees. Suddenly, like, you got a different conversation that's about to start. And then if you ask another question on top of that, simply to your point, why is that so wonderful to you? Tell me what that means. How's that manifest? All of a sudden it gets better and better and better. And then maybe you'll earn enough trust because people see you differently that you can ask the question. So tell me real quick, and please be honest, what's your biggest frustration at work right now? How often do we ask that as leaders? Well, we might do it in a one-to-one, some type of checkup, but as part of our standard conversations, do we just integrate that into the mix? We stay at surface levels. We have surface level conversations, and therefore we have surface level relationships, and that can be fixed. You know, you hear all this stuff about culture building within organizations, and I laugh at most of it because I think culture building is going to be found, you know, if you have a keg that's on tap for everybody, or mm-hmm. you have some fun spiffs where you all go to, you know, some activity, go to the theme park together for the day or whatever, escape room. That's a joke. It's not going to build a culture. Now, if you teach in-depth ways to communicate as an organization, you really, really focus on it, you'll revolutionize the culture within a business. But how often does, you just take a manager, for example, how often do managers receive training on how to ask better questions when they become a manager. It's extremely rare. They became a manager because they were doing the thing pretty well. And they said, okay, well, they're doing it well, so we might as well have them do the thing. I have no idea if they really know how to ask better questions.
That's right. Or they assume, well, they, you know, let's say they handled, you know, 10 people team, and now they're putting in promotion and handling a 30 person team and so on. They assume they must be good with people, or else they wouldn't have the results they have.
100%. So. And oftentimes that's the worst gauge. Previous success is the worst gauge of management and leadership skills.
Because it doesn't really tell you what the next task or what the
no, next no, it's same thing with let's take salespeople, for example. Highest performing salespeople are oftentimes the ones that think way outside the box. They don't play within the confines of the rules. They're very, very, you know, creative. They don't have a great attention to detail necessarily. And they just know how to get stuff done. And they just do it differently, right? They're more efficient with their time, whatever. And then all of a sudden you ask them to become a manager and they have to play within the confines of the rules that they've been given as a manager. And now they have to have a better, more patient ear and listen better, you know, to their teammates. And you know, they expect them to think like they do, which is oftentimes clearly not going to be the case. And so this is why the majority of people that are in sales that become sales managers, the majority, more than 50%, don't actually work out. Doesn't work. There's a lot of reasons for it, but the way we choose these things based on previous performance and said job is actually rather silly.
That's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about sales, right? So these transformative communication, transformative conversations, which I love the idea of it, starting with good questions. How does that translate into in a sales process, in you know, whether from a leadership point of view, which you've alluded to in your prior comment, all the way through to how do I use any of that with customers?
Yeah.
Or don't I?
So not to beat a dead horse here, but when I meet with salespeople, I'll generally ask, one of the first questions I'll ask is, how many of you believe that you're truly skilled at asking questions to your prospects, to your customers? Most people at first think they are, until you test them on the skill. And then they quickly realize they're not, because they don't think in the form of a question. Generally, most salespeople think in the form of pontification. Mm-hmm. I want to tell you all the reasons why you should consider this thing. And this whole idea of ask questions, maybe they can follow the script. They know some of the general questions, but still, more often than not, it's pontification.
Whereas the question is just a tee up.
It's just a setup for them to pontificate, right? That's what it is. And here's how you know you're in a different class as a salesperson. And this is going to sound funny to people. How often does it occur where you meet with someone and 5-10 minutes later, they say to you literally, I don't have any idea why I'm telling you this, because I never tell this. I've never told this to somebody else, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you. That's the sign. Mm. You've got it if people tell you things that they didn't expect to tell you, because you induced something in them that they just didn't previously feel with other people like you, peers, right, in your space. And because you induce so much trust with the signals that you sent, generally the way you listened and the way you asked questions, suddenly they found themselves in a position of comfort that was almost surreal to them or surprising to them. That's how you know it. Same way, so that's the litmus test for a salesperson. Here's a litmus test for a leader, for example, because there's always specific litmus tests. So litmus test for a salesperson, prospect says, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I'm going to tell you this. For the leader, here's how it sounds. When they're meeting with the individual says, you know what? Now that you mention it, or now that you asked that, or to come to, now that I'm thinking about it, here's what I think I should do. So that's called a light bulb moment. And so how often as a leader do you induce light bulb moments in those that you're talking to? You can easily measure this throughout the week. As a salesperson, how often does someone tell you, I can't believe I'm telling you this? It goes back, though, to a singular principle, which, of course, is trust, right? How do we induce trust? We have to communicate differently. And generally, it's by simplifying the way we say the thing. Why do most marketers struggle? Because they overcomplicate. Why do most marketers struggle to get buy-in within their organization? Because they speak like a marketer. Because you speak like a marketer, you don't resonate with sales. You don't resonate with leadership. Once you learn to shift the way that you communicate, now suddenly you become much more effective, much more influential, and marketing gets a seat at the table like it should have had a long time ago.
Well, if I may just jump on that for a moment, Marcus, because that is actually called out very explicitly. In a meeting, they'll say, oh, you sound like a marketer. It's not a compliment.
No, it's not.
You know, because it's exactly what you're describing. It's you sound like somebody that takes simple things and fancies them up somehow with more words than necessary. And it just makes it more complicated to understand what it is you're trying to communicate. And sometimes just using simple words. And I think there's certain roles, especially in like high-end complex corporate selling, where you want to sound intelligent. So you try to use, you try to use more words, bigger words, words that sound like I went to school, instead of just simple words, to your point, I think is what you, what I'm hearing from you, that just convey the meaning of what you want to say.
And it's not just the meeting. It's your authority as a professional. So for example, the shorter your questions become, the more effective you become as well as a communicator. The higher your authority is in the eyes of the listener. And so there's a big difference between me saying to you, so Jose, yeah, I mean, if you could explain it, so why exactly did you make that decision? Versus me saying, Jose, why did you do that? It's a huge difference in that question. But if you listen to most questions, they're long. Why are they long? There's different reasons why they're long. But for leaders and for salespeople, the reason why they're longer is because the longer the question, the more manifestation of doubt and authority in what that individual just spoke or said. The shorter the question, the greater the sense of surety, confidence, and trust.
Well, that's something to really take to heart because, you know, I'm in meetings all day, every day, right? Working with mostly business owners in B2B categories. And I will be mindful of what you just said, which is, am I asking shorter questions or am I giving too many preambles, you know, in a sense, like, you know, caveats, if, then, and so on, all of that to try to get to a simple answer. So that's a very powerful insight there, Marcus. Thank you for that.
Man, when I'm reviewing like leadership or sales conversations, you know, with folks, oftentimes we'll, if we're watching, let's say a recorded call, I'll say, why are you asking it like that? Why not go in a straight line right now? Because usually if you got a point A and a point B, the way we get there is this roundabout way with our questions or with our statements. Again, we're hedging. The more you hedge, the more you lose authority and confidence from your audience. And so if you can say the thing in a straight line, keeping in mind that you have to do it with caring, you have to do it with love, but you still have to say it in a straight line. When you say in a straight line, you get there immediately. You have breakthroughs. It's like one of the things that, you know, I remember it was about 3 years ago, my marketing agency merged with another marketing agency. And sometimes I would join the sales team on calls, and they would observe, and they quickly observed, wow, Marcus closes sales probably at a 5x rate faster than the rest of our sales team. So they saw that and like, well, that's because you're Marcus. Mm-hmm. So because you're Marcus and they know you're Marcus, that gives you natural authority. I'm like, that's not the case at all. And so we started bringing in people, or I would get involved with calls where the person didn't know who I was. They had no clue. And then we saw the same results. And that's when the sales team said, okay, what is it exactly that you're doing? And they realized there was signals within the way they were communicating that was diminishing their authority and therefore ultimately the trust that they were able to achieve with their listeners. Lots of times it comes down to the way we ask the question. Is it a shorter question? Is it stated with that high caring, high love, while at the same time with utmost certainty and clarity?
Well, and you know, what's interesting about that too, Marcus, is when you ask questions and you kind of hit it with integrity and love, even the idea that I'm talking to you because I actually am interested in helping you.
That's right.
For example, right? So that comes across like I'm trying to help you. So I'm going to ask some questions just so I understand better how I can help you. And those questions aren't mysterious. Those questions aren't complex. They're very direct, very simple. It starts feeling human to human, like we're having a real conversation. Then your sincerity of motive. Yes, I want to do business if it makes sense to do business. But that comes across and people do respond to that, right? I mean, that's just you at a human level. You kind of are gauging, do I believe what this guy's telling me? Do I believe this guy is on the level to try to help me out with this problem?
100%. It's no different than, you know, at the beginning of any sales conversation, there should be a very frank moment where you agree up front at any point in this conversation, if either one of us feels like this is not a fit, that we commit to being honest enough with each other to let the other person, the other party know. Would you be willing to commit to do that? Because we certainly will be here. And so it's like this green light to A, be who you are, be yourself. At the same time, it accepts the reality that this might not be the right fit. And if you just say that, if you speak the obvious, it's almost like you have to, when you disconnect with outcome as a salesperson, outcome being closed deal, you mm-hmm. disconnect with it and they sense that you're totally fine walking away from it, not because you're arrogant, but simply because you're so obsessed with fit that you're totally fine if it doesn't work out. It's a different conversation, totally different ballgame. Most don't start conversations that way, though. Not with that pre-commitment. That's what I just described as pretty Sandler-ish, right? I mean, that's a very Sandler thing to do, Sandler sales. But fundamentally, it goes back to psychology and about establishing authority and trust very, very early in the relationship or the conversation.
Yeah, but one thing, and I would take not issue with what your observation. I agree, it's Sandler-like in that regard. Where I see a lot of salespeople in practice do those upfront commitments, they actually feel like they're trying to corner you at times. And I'm not accusing Sandler of that. I'm just saying sometimes people use upfront commitments to box you in, and you feel it on the other side, like I'm being boxed in. And that actually blows up that trust, that sincerity, all that blows up. So how you do it, how you set up that upfront commitment is really
every good thing can everything. Be used for bad.
That's right.
Right. Just like I have to, you know, when I'm meeting with, let's say leaders, especially and teaching them communication, we have to early in the conversation say, now we have to make a commitment with each other here. The commitment is this, that you will only use what you're about to learn for good. And it has to be based in truth and love. If it's not based in truth and love for the audience, the person, the individual that you're speaking with, well, then you're not allowed to use this. Because this is also why, if you look at the ability to communicate itself as a skill, as art form, this is how terrible leaders are born. In the history of the world, we've seen it. It's because they were generally better communicators. And they mesmerized those people around them. because they mesmerized them, right? We had really negative influence, negative influence. But we can't allow those moments to say, well, questions are manipulative. No, 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 no. Manipulative questions are manipulative. Great questions change lives for the better.
I love that, Marcus. And we're going to have to put that as the dot on the board here. Great questions change lives for the better. Marcus Sheridan, thank you for sharing with our audience here on the Revenue Throughput Podcast, all about transformative communication. And I love it. And the application of it is far reaching. So thanks again for sharing with us today.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.